The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from Wright Memorial Public Library, Clark County Public Library, Tipp City Public Library, Dayton Metro Library, and Washington Centerville Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today Samantha Shannon. Her latest book in the Bone Season series just came out. It's called The Dark Mirror. She joins us on the telephone in Chicago. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
I understand that you took a little longer writing this one because you were working on some other projects, like rewriting the first four books. Is this true?
Yeah, so this one did take a little while compared to the others. So the last Bone Season book was called The Mask Falling, and it came out in 2021. And the main reason it took so long was because I wrote a novel in my other series, which was called A Day of Fallen Night, which is a pretty long book. It's over 800 pages, so that did delay The Dark Mirror for a while. And then, like you said, I rewrote the first four books in the series. I created the author's preferred texts, which are basically the same story, but just with a style kind of that I've developed over the last 10 years. I think I've become a better writer in that time. And I wrote the first Bone Season book when I was very young. I was only 19. So, yeah, I really just wanted to go back and do the early books in the series a bit more justice before I wrote the fifth one. And, yeah, The Dark Mirror has just come out now.
When you wrote those first books, that first one, when you were 19, your mind was full of ideas. But now, in retrospect, you're a much more accomplished writer in your thoughts, and you had to tone it down a little bit. Wasn't Paige a lot angrier back in the day?
Yes, she was, actually. I mean, she has reason to be angry. So the main character, Paige, spends much of the first book in a sort of very unpleasant prison city. But yes, she was very angry. And I think that's partly reflected by the fact that I was a teenager when I wrote it, and I was very angry about various things. And she still is quite an angry character in the revised version, but it's in a slightly smarter way. There were often times in the original version where I just felt that her anger was, it didn't really make sense for a character from her background to not know when was the right moment to use her anger and when was the right moment to keep it under wraps. And I think now that I'm 33 now, and I think I suppose I'm a slightly more jaded person than I was when I was 19. So her anger is perhaps a little bit more jaded, a little bit more weary in the updated version. I suppose she almost reads a bit like a 30-year-old stuck in the body of a 19-year-old now, but I do think it works for her character.
Well, over the course of these books, they're really just compressed into about a year-long time frame, aren't they? And as this one opens, Paige has lost her memory. And it's because is this a flower that they've been giving her?
Yes. The first four books take place over the course of pretty much exactly a year, which is funny because it took me 10 years to write those four. And for Paige, only a year has passed. But yeah, this one has a little bit of a time jump. So we go forward 6 months, but to Paige, it seems like no time has passed at all because, like you say, she has been given this flower, which is called White Aster. White Aster is a flower in the real world, but in the world of the Bone Season, certain real-world plants have different sort of more magical, fantastical qualities to them. So in this world, White Aster causes amnesia. So she's lost the last 6 months, and she wakes up in a country that she's never been to before with no idea how she got there. So it's quite a jarring start to the novel for Paige, for sure.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Samantha Shannon. Her new one is The Dark Mirror. It's book number 5 in the Bone Season series, which, according to the plan, is going to be 7 books. Are you sticking with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, to be honest, I could make it longer than that I suppose I could make it up to 10 books. But I'm trying to control myself and just do 7.
We have listeners out there who might not be familiar with the series. Can you give us, in a nutshell, this world that you've created? We don't need to have you go back to the very first chapter of the very first book where you pretty much did that. But can you tell us like what the clairvoyant thing is and just some of the basics?
So the novel, the series begins in the year 2059, and it's set in an alternate reality where the British monarchy was overthrown in the early 20th century and replaced with something called the Republic of Sion. And Sion's kind of aim is to hunt people who have clairvoyant abilities. And that's basically anybody who can connect with the spirit world. And there's all kinds of different ways they can do that. So some people are mediums who can be possessed by spirits. Some people can use crystal balls and tarot cards. Some people are oracles who get visions of the future. And anybody who has this kind of ability has an aura, and they can be, they can be seen by Sion and end up being hunted by them. And the main character, Paige, is an especially rare kind of clairvoyant called a dreamwalker, which means that she can actually push her own spirit out of her body and possess other people. So it's a really like dangerous and powerful ability. And one day she uses it and accidentally kills two people, and she gets arrested. And she thinks that she's going to be executed, which is what happens to most clairvoyants who get found by Sion. But instead, she's taken to this prison city, and she discovers the reason that Sion hunts clairvoyants, and it's far bigger than she could ever have imagined. From there, the series, there's a lot more layers to it, but it's loosely inspired by several Greek myths, including Hades and Persephone and Orpheus and Eurydice.
And she's the Orpheus in this story. Yeah. And I'm being careful here about what happens in the dark mirror, but I think we can dance around some of this. This is definitely the most romantic book in the series, isn't it?
Definitely, yes. It's the romance does go through the whole series to some degree, but it's a very, very slow burning romance. The main couple really does, you know, step forward in tiny, tiny increments in each book. But this is the book I can't say a lot about the romance without spoilers, but it is where kind of a lot of the romance comes to a culmination, and there's a lot of catharsis and a lot of things that needed to be said in earlier books finally being said. It is pretty romantic.
Tell us more about Paige and what Paige is doing. She's the under queen. Tell us about this.
Sure. So Paige starts off the series. She's 19 and she is working in the criminal underworld of London, which is the capital of the Republic of Sion in this world. And Paige is Irish. And in this world, the Irish rebelled against Sion, which conquered Ireland. And so a lot of Irish people are treated badly in Sion because of that. And Paige, being Irish, has gone into the clairvoyant underworld to protect herself from Sion. And she's ended up with quite a high rank. She's working at the right hand of this kind of mob boss called the White Binder. And she's doing pretty okay for herself in that role. And then, like I said, she gets arrested and her life is just put onto an entirely different course. And she ends up realizing that she really needs to lead an actual rebellion against Sion. So in the later parts of the series, she ends up becoming the leader of the clairvoyant underworld, the under queen, like you said. She finds herself occupying this leadership role that she didn't think she would. And with each book in the series, she does something slightly different in her contribution to the rebellion against Sion. So in the fourth book, she kind of delves into espionage for the first time, and she starts using her gift to spy on agents of Sion. So that was a lot of fun to write.
Well, your timing on this is exquisite. We have 2060, and this Sion is colonizing. They want to take over other countries, and we have people who are mistreated because of who they are. And let's talk about Arturus, because he's different. What is he?
Yeah, it's almost a bit hard to explain. So there's these supernatural creatures in the book who are called the Rephaim or Reph. And essentially, they're human-looking, but they are of larger-than-average stature. And they are essentially kind of like super clairvoyants. Like, they have clairvoyant powers, but they are much more closely connected to the spirit world than humans are. And a lot of Rephaim consider themselves superior to humans. So they don't really have a great attitude towards us on the whole. But Arcturus is, well, he starts off as Paige's enemy, and she thinks that he's someone who's out to get her, but then she realizes that he's a little bit different from the other refs, and he becomes the love interest of the series. And that's been really fun for me because I'm fascinated by the concept of immortality and how immortals would think compared to mortals and how best to express that in a book. So I've really enjoyed developing his friendship and later his romance with Paige and trying to make it, you know, really dig into the challenges of a relationship between someone who's mortal and someone who isn't. And I came up with Arcturus when I was about 15 years old, so he's been in my head for a really long time now, and it's such a joy to still be writing about him all these years later.
Wow. Well, he's quite a character, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say that in this book, Paige is getting physically beat up quite a bit, and so she needs to take some breaks. And we have some chapters in here where she's recovering, and that's when some of the romance takes place. And this is very powerful. I think that your romantic scenes are rather exquisite.
There are quite a lot of downtime parts in this book, I suppose. Paige has gone through an awful lot in the first four books, especially, like you mentioned, just being going through a lot physically, going through a lot emotionally and mentally. She's subjected to being tortured in the third book. And I've always really wanted to honor that in the books. I didn't just want to brush her trauma under the carpet. You know, I wanted to really think about the repercussions of this, you know, Herculean task that she's trying to achieve by defeating this empire. So stuff like she breaks her wrist in the first book and she's still having trouble with it in the fifth book. But yeah, it was important to me that she had a little bit of downtime just to rest and slow down and reflect in this book. I know a lot of my readers definitely wanted her to have a little bit of a rest. Like, that's a kind of ongoing joke of when is Paige going to be able to actually have a nap. There's some scenes in Venice, which I really enjoy writing, and Orvieto, which is a really beautiful Italian hilltop city. So I really enjoy doing the research for those scenes.
Yes. When I read about Orvieto in that period when she's there, it made me want to go there. I felt like the tourism department had written that section. And obviously, you went there and you really liked it.
I was just utterly in love with it when I arrived there. It's got the most stunning views because of how high up it is. You can see over the valley from the hilltop. And it's got this really beautiful landmark called the Well of St. Patrick, which is really quite an astonishing feat of architecture. It's basically this very old well where there are two staircases that intertwine, but they never actually touch each other. So you have this curious sensation that when you're going down the steps, you can see other people coming up, but you never cross paths with them. Huh. And it's really quite a breathtaking place.
You're listening to the Book Nook on 91.3 WYSO, sharing community voices through inspired storytelling. And you really do get into your research. There's a short section that takes place on the island of Capri, the Italian island. In fact, a lot of this is set in Italy, which I loved. And I heard a rumor that you went to Capri and you really got into researching. And I think this is kind of an amazing thing.
Yeah, so basically I went to Capri specifically to see this landmark called the Blue Grotto. And it's basically this cave where the daylight kind of shines in from outside through the seawater. So it gives the impression that the water is glowing blue inside the cave. So I went to Capri and I was only there for one day. So, you know, I had to try to look at this cave on that specific day or I was going to miss my chance. So I went down to the bottom of these steps and I was waiting for the boats that take people into the caves. And this Italian guy said, oh, I'm really sorry, like the tide is too high today, so we can't, you know, we can't have people inside the Blue Grotto. And I was obviously really disappointed because I was having to leave Capri later that day. And so I waited until the boats had gone. And then I was so determined that I had to at least look at the cave and to see what the entrance looked like, that I ended up jumping into the sea fully clothed, just to go and swim up to the cave. I just felt like I needed to do some kind of physical research as I was there. And then I spent the rest of the day just trudging around Capri, completely soaked in my skin, trying to dry off. But yeah, I'm nothing if not ambitious when it comes to research.
I love that. You have a character named Jackson. And whenever this character appears on the page, I think readers feel that the page is electrified. This guy really puts out some vibes.
He starts off as Paige's employer in the underworld. He's the white binder who I mentioned earlier. And yeah, he's very, very charismatic. He has a silver tongue. He's a narcissist through and through. And he's a very clever manipulator. So when Paige starts off the series, she really, you know, she really likes Jackson and she always wants to impress him. And she sees him as her savior, you know, who protected her from Sion and who gave her this high role in the criminal underworld. But then when she goes to the prison city of Oxford, she's away from Jackson for the first time pretty much in her formative years. And she finally begins to realize that he's actually quite a harmful influence on her, who has been trying to force her to use her clairvoyant abilities as a weapon in a way that she didn't really want to. And then she only continues to have a more and more complicated relationship with Jackson throughout the series. So in the second book, she outright challenges him. In the third book, he very much becomes her enemy, and that extends into the fourth book. I won't say exactly what happens to their relationship in the fifth book, but it only gets more tangled. And he is such a joy to write because he's someone who uses language as a weapon. So he's always very eloquent, and he has quite a flamboyant, elaborate way of speaking. So as someone who really loves language, I always enjoy writing his dialogue so much. It's always a fun challenge to, you know, think of what Jackson's going to say next and how he would describe and perceive the world. But yeah, I'm glad you felt like he was giving that energy because that's very much my aim.
Oh, he's wonderful. And another character who's more peripheral, but is just an excellent character. We just love it when she's around, and that's Maria.
Oh, I love Maria, yeah. Maria was one of those characters who actually really took me by surprise because she was supposed to be a very minor character in the second book. And then she just kept pushing her way onto the page and almost just demanding more space, and I was happy to give it to her. But yeah, she's this kind of fiery Bulgarian woman who has the ability, well, quite literally fiery because she has the ability to use fire as a weapon and also to use it to see the future. And yeah, she's just a lot of fun. I like having, it's a very dark story, so I like having characters who are funny and who kind of lift the tone a little bit.
Mm.
And this is the same, I say the same thing about Paige, the main character. I sometimes describe her as being like a comedy protagonist stuck in a dystopia.
Mm.
But I thought if I'm going to write a 7-book series that is dystopian and that is really dark and heavy at points and that's going to deal with some very difficult subject matter, I do need to have characters who can keep the reader going and keep their hopes up and just allow them to laugh sometimes at the absurdity of it. So yeah, Paige and Maria together, particularly the Dark Mirror, I think they make quite a dynamic duo in this one.
Samantha Shannon joins us. We're talking about the Dark Mirror. It just came out. And I understand that you're currently working on a prequel for your other series.
Yeah, so my other series is called The Roots of Chaos, and it's currently made up of two books. One of them's called The Priory of the Orange Tree, and one of them's called A Day of Fallen Night. But both books are really quite big. They're both over 800 pages long. And I really wanted to write something that was a bit more of an accessible entry point into this world. So my upcoming one in September is called Among the Burning Flowers. And it's a direct prequel to The Priory of the Orange Tree, which tells the story of the fall of a country called Iskalin, which you see at the beginning of The Priory of the Orange Tree after it's fallen to this dragon-worshipping religion. And yeah, I'm quite excited about it because it gives more of a background story to some of the secondary characters from Priory. And like I said, I'm really hoping that readers who might have been intimidated by the size of the main installment will find this kind of an easier way to come into the world of the Roots of Chaos.
Yeah, it started off as a novella, but this is Samantha Shannon, so forget it.
Yeah, I honestly did go into it wanting to write a novella. It's now a short novel, but in my defense, my publisher said that they really wanted to see something a bit longer because they loved the concept so much. So yeah, it's 60,000 words, which is about 20,000 words above the maximum size of a novella. But for me, it's still a pretty short book.
Mm. How is your life different now that you've become so well known? Have you had any difficulties with that as far as just having so many people interested in you? Has it made your life harder? How's your life changed?
You know, I think it seems easier now than it has previously, because I, way back at the beginning of my career, when I first published The Bone Season, when I was that young, I had a bit of a baptism of fire. Because of my age, the global media was very, very interested in me. So I had this entire year where I was just doing all kinds of just incredible things. Like I was doing like the New York Times magazine, and I did photo shoots with Vogue, and just all of these things that I could not ever have imagined doing. And that was so overwhelming and so intense that in comparison to that, anything else feels quite easy and calm. And I actually prefer this point of my career where I feel like I'm known now for the books I've written rather than the books I'm going to write, because in that intense year, nobody had actually read The Bone Season. They just knew that I was this young woman with this flashy book deal. And that period of my life was very, very difficult, and it was very hard on me mentally. But now I feel very happy and very grateful for where my career is. The Priory of the Orange Tree became very big on TikTok, and it ended up selling over 1 million copies, which is, again, just more than I could possibly have imagined. And I'm so grateful for that. And it has definitely seen my career change a lot. But I feel like I just have the most incredible reader base. I mean, on this tour, I've met so many people, and I just have such kind and generous and creative readers. And I always have the best time meeting them and talking to them. So, yeah, I just feel really, really happy with where my career is at the moment.
You've felt the TikTok effect. I've heard about that. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, well, I wasn't actually on TikTok at the time. I mean, I am on TikTok loosely, but I've only done about 20-odd videos because I don't particularly like being on camera. I'm not particularly videogenic. But, yeah, I just heard that Priory was being talked about a lot on there, and it was just incredible. Like, I've never seen anything like it, because I thought The Priory of the Orange Tree was going to be quite a niche book, to be honest, mostly because of its huge size. And then there was just this explosion of interest in it, and it was, yeah, just incredible. It changed my whole life and my whole career.
Well, I came into radio as a music DJ. And I kept getting phone calls. We had authors coming through our area, and they kept saying, well, why don't you interview an author on your show? And I'd say, well, I don't do that. And finally, I broke down, and I interviewed my first author, and I really wasn't familiar with her at all. I just read her book, and I interviewed her. And during the interview, she kind of acted like, doesn't this guy know who I am? And her name was Anne McCaffrey.
Oh, my God. That's wild.
Yeah, and I was like, I looked her up afterwards. I was like, oops, I guess she's kind of well known.
Yeah, she's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, but I had no clue what I was doing. And it's kind of like when you started off with your career, did you really have a clue what you were doing?
Oh, no, gosh, not at all. I mean, I had no idea I wanted to be an author all my life, but you don't really think about what that means, especially when you're really young. You get straight into this process of starting to edit your book alongside professional editors, and I suppose I expected that part, but it's quite an odd career in that you have to be two very different kinds of people at once. Like, half of you is this introvert who sits indoors and makes up worlds and writes them down, and it's like weeks or months of just sitting there by yourself writing. But then you also have to be partly a performer. You know, you have to go out and talk about your books, and in that case you need to be an extrovert, almost the opposite of what you need to be a writer.
Mm.
So that definitely took some getting used to, like being those two, sort of tapping into those two different sides of myself. And I'm a much more natural introvert. So I did have to learn over the years to be confident talking to people about my work and being able to explain it. And especially when I was 19, 20 years old, that was really difficult for me. Like, you know, doing a phone interview like this would have terrified me at that point in my life. But now I really enjoy both. I think I've grown into myself a lot, and I've gained a lot of confidence by doing this job.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Samantha Shannon. Her new book is The Dark Mirror. It's book 5 in the Bone Season series. And I understand you went to Oxford, and that while you were there, you kind of got inspired for another aspect of this series.
Yeah, I did go to Oxford. I was there from 2010 to 2013. And Oxford was quite a strange experience for me. Like, I worked very, very hard to get in there, and I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunities that it gave me academically. But I did have quite a difficult time there. I felt really, really out of my depth. I had imposter syndrome. You know, I was meeting students who were, you know, fluent in Latin, which I had never been given the opportunity to learn at my school. And I suppose I just felt a little bit like a fish out of water. And I ended up imagining the city as quite a dark place. It can be quite isolating as well, because when you're at Oxford, you're away from home doing these very, very intense academic terms. You're doing 8 essays every term, 8 essays in 8 weeks. And it just felt very intense, like being away from home for the first time like that, but also being put through this really rigorous course at Oxford. I was doing English language and literature. You're doing lectures and classes, and then you're doing your own research. And ultimately, it gave me an impression of the city that I was intimidated by it. And I expressed that intimidation by writing this dark version of the city in The Bone Season. Often in fiction, Oxford is portrayed as this very magical place. But for me, I wanted to look at it through from a slightly darker perspective. And that's where The Bone Season ended up coming from.
Well, my view of Oxford is entirely the result of watching Inspector Morse. It's just,
oh, really?
I've never been there. That's my only impression of it. Well, this is quite a book.
It's a beautiful city. But yeah, it's living there all the time is a slightly different experience for sure.
Yeah. Well, this is quite a book. And I've got to give it to you. When we get to the climactic scenes at the end, I'm not going to give anything away, but I'll just say that they take place in Rome. And man, there's just so much action. I kept seeing this on the big screen. I kept going, oh gosh, I just love to see this. You'd have to computerize it. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
Oh, thank you. I actually normally really don't like writing battle scenes. I find them very difficult. It's a lot of movement. You know, you have to think about where everybody is. You're sort of strategizing the battle moves. And I find it much harder than writing kind of softer scenes. But in that case, it was such a chaotic battle. And I loved having it all play out on this wonderful stage of Rome. Like I said, I absolutely love Italy. And I always knew that I wanted this final battle to take place in Rome. So I actually just had a lot of fun with it just because it was so big and chaotic and there's so much happening. And it brings a few older elements of the series from the earlier books kind of back into the fray. And there's a lot of characters involved, and it's, you know, a lot of different characters coming together to use their powers in a way that they haven't really in the series before. So, yeah, I'm really glad you enjoyed it because I did have a lot of fun writing that one.
Yeah, it's very cool. 3 o'clock in the morning, I could not. I kept saying, I got to go to bed. I had to get to the end of that particular chapter. I was like, wow. Well, thank you so much, Samantha. It's been so great talking to you.
You as well. Thank you very much for having me.
My guest has been Samantha Shannon. Her new one is The Dark Mirror. You heard about it on the Book Nook. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis.